Firefox is now the last major browser that still supports the full, classic uBlock Origin extension. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan. This show curates conversation from online communities and is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Today's date is August 15th, 2026. That Firefox detail matters because it's where a tech policy debate about user control, advertising, and platform limits collides with creators, privacy tools, and a wider loss of trust in AI and the companies that build it. A Wall Street Bets post that polled more than 7,100 upvotes is a small story with a common, timely lesson. A user said they started investing after getting laid off, and commenters overwhelmingly advised the opposite of speculative trading. Build a cash safety net first. The thread named concrete items. Prioritize an emergency fund, check unemployment and tax implications, and consider talking to an advisor before touching retirement accounts. Watch this because when markets feel like a quick fix after income shocks, the crowd on social platforms still often points back to basic risk management. VLC users found their MP3s and videos taking 30 to 33 seconds to start on some Windows 11 machines. The VLC team blamed a Microsoft Defender interaction that quarantined VLC's plugin cache. The project posted concrete fixes. Run VLC cachegen.exe, reinstall to rebuild the cache, or temporarily exclude VLC's folders from Defender, and users reported the lag disappeared after those steps. Keep this in your troubleshooting toolbox. If a familiar app suddenly feels sluggish after an update, check your antivirus quarantine and cache files before assuming the app itself is broken.
Treasury yields have stayed stubbornly high, even after a run of softer inflation and jobs data, and investors are pointing to a rising term premium, essentially extra compensation demanded to hold long-dated treasuries, tied to large federal deficits and heavy bond issuance. That matters because higher long yields push up mortgage rates and lower the present value of long-dated corporate profits, making high-growth stocks more expensive to justify. Watch this. If yields stay elevated, expect pressure on housing affordability and on companies whose value depends on cheap financing. What changed this week is structural. Chrome and other Chromium-based browsers moved the extensions platform toward Manifest V3, and that decision has real, measurable consequences for ad and tracker blocking. The short version is technical, but simple in consequence. The Web Request API, which allowed extensions to inspect and block individual network requests in real time, has been replaced by a more constrained system called Declarative Net Request. That system enforces a limit on how many filtering rules an extension can use, far fewer than the hundreds of thousands of rules some power users run with uBlock Origin. The result? uBlock Origin's unfettered version can no longer run in full on most Chromium browsers, leaving Firefox as the last major browser that still supports the classic community-built uBlock experience.
For listeners who use blockers, that's not an abstract fight over developer ergonomics. It's a direct change in what your browser can actually do for you. uBlock Origin's creator warned users plainly that Manifest V2 uBlock Origin will not be automatically replaced by Manifest V3 uBlock Origin. You will have to explicitly make a choice. And Reddit's discussion, a thread that drew tens of thousands of votes and thousands of comments, was largely a user reaction to that choice point. Some people immediately recommended switching to Firefox, others debated the security arguments Google makes for MV3, and many technical users dug into workarounds. Google frames MV3 as an improvement in security and performance. By moving to a declarative model, they reduce the surface area where an extension could intercept and tamper with sensitive web traffic. Critics countered that those same constraints hand control back to the browser vendor and downstream ad platforms because they shrink the capability set available to independent privacy tools.
There are three practical threads to pull on here. First, compatibility. If you rely on complex filter lists, maybe you use dozens of lists that together add up to hundreds of thousands of rules to strip trackers, regional ads, or annoyances, those lists simply will not fit under the rule caps MV3 imposes on Chromium. That isn't speculation. It's the engineering trade-off the Chromium team explicitly designed. Second, user agency.
The extension model under MV2 allowed extensions to make real-time decisions about requests, which enabled third-party tools to evolve rapidly in response to new tracker techniques. Under the new model, providers have to pre-compile policies into fixed rule sets, making rapid adaptation harder and, in practice, tilting power toward browser vendors and their preferred partners. Third, user choice and fragmentation. Some users will switch to Firefox to preserve full blocker functionality. Others will accept a light uBlock and live with reduced filtering. Still others will move to new privacy browsers or pay for VPNs and system-level blockers.
Those moves have broader consequences. Advertisers and many ad tech companies have already adjusted strategies in light of blocking capabilities. A less powerful blocker ecosystem can mean easier ad delivery and more pervasive tracking. For independent developers and open source projects, this is a reminder that platform rules can make or break community tools. On the flip side, defenders of MV3 point to real security wins, reducing the ability of a malicious extension to exfiltrate data or modify requests in unexpected ways, and to performance gains on constrained devices. The core tension is exactly what the Reddit comments zeroed in on. Are we willing to trade some degree of user control and third-party innovation for centralized security and performance improvements controlled by the browser vendor? If you want a practical way forward, first, inventory what you actually use. If you run a few simple block lists, MV3's limits might not affect you. If you rely on advanced filters, regional lists, anti-malware lists, cosmetic rules that match many domains, then switching to Firefox or configuring a system-level blocker remains the most straightforward way to retain that capability. Second, where you can, support open-source maintainers. These are community projects that require time and money to keep patching and updating lists. Third, pressure and watch browser policies. These platform-level decisions are not permanent. They can be negotiated or reversed if enough users and enterprise customers push back. But that requires both awareness and a willingness to change tools.
Relatedly, platforms are increasingly offloading quality control to automated signals. And that's where the YouTube story enters the same conversation about control and trust. This week, YouTube started a test that asks viewers whether a video feels like AI slop, an attempt to crowdsource the detection of low-quality or obviously synthetic content. A high-profile educational channel, Kurzgesagt, reported that the system incorrectly flagged one of their uploads and that the video became their worst-performing upload after the test rolled out. The concrete result? A measurable drop in reach, is precisely why creators are nervous. Automated user surveys and algorithmic signals can change recommendation flows, and false positives can quietly suppress legitimate content. The skepticism is visible on multiple levels. Creators want clearer appeals and human review when automated systems move their metrics. YouTube has legitimate reasons for the test. The platform has been fighting a flood of AI-generated, low-value content that attempts to game viewers and recommendations. But the blunt instrument of automated suppression risks collateral damage to reputable channels, and the short-term consequence is economic for creators who rely on visibility for revenue. The Reddit reaction leaned toward calls for transparency. Users asked, who designs the classifiers? How will false positives be fixed? And what redress exists for harmed creators? And that's the right set of questions. Platforms are experimenting in public because the problem is new, but the method matters. If a system cannot reliably distinguish between genuinely thin AI output and high-signal human-produced work, then the cure may be worse than the disease.
Layer onto that the broader public mood about AI, and you get a picture of eroding trust. A recent survey of 1,088 Americans aged 18 to 34 found 45% believe AI will harm their careers, while only 10% think it will help them. When respondents were shown 9 prominent AI executives, not one of those leaders registered net positive trust. For example, one polling highlight showed 81% distrusted Palantir's co-founder and 79% distrusted a well-known venture figure. That's a stark, quantifiable anchor. Young adults, the largest users of these services and most exposed to labor market shifts, are increasingly skeptical of both the technology and the people who sell it. Put these pieces together and a narrative emerges. Platform owners and large tech firms are rolling out rules or automated systems that centrally shape what users see and what tools can do.
independent tools and creators are being squeezed or misclassified, and users, especially younger cohorts, are losing faith in the people running the show. That triangulation has consequences for regulation, for the economics of creator platforms, and for the social compact between companies and users. Regulators are already asking hard questions about dominant platforms and their gatekeeper power. These episodes feed that case. Creators are asking for more transparent classifiers and clearer human review. Users who value privacy and fine-grained control are considering alternatives, different browsers, system-level blockers, or paying for premium services that promise less algorithmic interference.
So what should listeners do? First, treat platform defaults as active choices. You are not stuck with whatever the browser or video site does by default. Try an alternative browser if you care about extension fidelity. Audit recommended settings and privacy options. And for creators, monitor engagement metrics closely when major platform experiments roll out. Second, demand transparency, not as a slogan, but as a specific request. Ask platforms for explainable signals, meaningful human appeal channels, and public reporting on false positive rates. Third, vote with time and attention. If a platform repeatedly demotes quality content or removes meaningful control, creators and users can migrate to alternatives. And the economic cost of losing an audience is visible in creator wallets and engagement stats, which is how change happens. Reddit's reaction threads gave this a human texture. Some users urged immediate browser switches and shared step-by-step migration tips. Creators posted screenshots of plunging impressions and asked for community support. And many young people expressed wariness about entrusting judgment calls to automated systems. That mix of technical how-to, economic consequence, and social distrust is the story's core. It's not only about code and policies, it's about who gets to decide what the web looks like tomorrow. If we keep centralizing control over filters, feeds, and the rules that decide visibility, the real question becomes who benefits from that consolidation? Users, creators, or platform gatekeepers? I'm Alex Morgan. Debug the hype.